Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, so I think I have a decent guest list between now and 7 o'clock. How's this for your palate? You want an NCAA tournament? How about one of the men who's calling it? Spiro Ditas, CBS, called Virginia Tech last night. We shall talk to him, time TBD, but we will catch up with Spiro. He's at practice right now whenever he's got some time. We will talk to Danny Kelly from The Ringer about the NFL draft and free agency and all the other NFL things. And then there's a guy you may have heard of, talks about football, used to play football. He did a project this week on his podcast, and I want him to talk about it. His name is, how do you pronounce this again, Vic? Cooley?
Chris Cooley?
Christopher K. Cooley?
What's his middle name?
I don't know. I just know the initials K.
Okay.
And it's not actually short for chaos, but it could be.
Captain Chaos.
Chris Cooley on the show, talking about his, he actually did was a really cool project that, frankly, only he could do. Someone who has as much time on their hands as Chris and as much football institutional knowledge as Chris to dive in, and we talk about, like, is Jay Gruden a good play caller? Well, let's dive into the play calls. And so he has access to the film in a way that the rest of us don't. Like, you could, it takes a lot longer when you don't have the internal system that he has access to. And so he dove in. First down, second down, third down's a different animal. But what did he find? We're going to dive into some of the conclusions. For all the details, you'll have to listen to his podcast, which is via Redskins.com. But, man, he found some interesting stuff. So he's going to join us, I think, at 4:30 to do that. I also want to get into something that JP Finley and I got into yesterday as we were filling in for Dukes, which is, and I still, like, it's been a day and I can't get over this. We made a list of our 16 most important Redskins. JP did it for NBCSportsWashington.com, and then I made a list because I made a list for the show, because it'd be really stupid if we just debated his list and I was like, I think your list sucks, and I didn't have a list. He'd be like, well, where's your list? And I'm like, I don't have one. So I made a list. And there were two huge disagreements. One is where Jordan Reed belonged on the list. I had him second behind a player we dubbed QBX, some quarterback to be acquired on a rookie contract, whether that be Josh Rosen via trade or an actual rookie, first, second round, or, you know, a Mark Rippon type later in the draft. And so that was my one, JP's two. I can't remember who he had one. But then my number two was Jordan Reed, because I just think he's that important to their offense. And I understand that he's super hurt all the time and that he hasn't been that guy since 2015, but, like, that's the last time they made the playoffs, and that's kind of my evidence. When he's awesome, they're good. When he's not awesome, they're not. But the biggest disagreement we got into, which wound up literally taking over an hour of the show, was who was more important between Adrian Peterson and Darius Geis. Because JP had AP. I figured it out. Vic, why did it take me 24 hours? It's just because he likes the initials. It was a ploy all along. No, it was JP liked AP. He had him ranked 10th on his list, and he had Darius Geis ranked 12th. I had Darius 5th. I didn't have AP at all in my top 16, which is hard. Like, it's not that I don't think he's good or that he won't be important. It's just there's other dudes. And I think AP is going to ultimately be a backup who's used a lot, but a backup. And that thought, which I thought was conventional wisdom, blew people's minds. So at 800-636-1067, I would like to do this again today. And, you know, JP was accusing me of changing the argument yesterday that it's like, if healthy, blah, 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 blah. And I don't even want to make it if healthy, but I will tell you that Darius Geis is on pace to be healthy. So if you're going to put Darius Geis's health into this in some way, I just don't know where, like, I don't know how you're injecting that data into this argument as opposed to me taking it out. But fine, let's not lead the witness. Who was the most important Redskins running back in 2019? And I'll give you JP's argument, I'll give you mine, and then we'll get into it in the next segment with the callers. 800-636-1067. And then we will definitely get into some Maryland stuff. Is there out of the tournament? Turgeon. Turgeon's super emotional, by the way. We'll play that sound for you coming up in a little bit. Turgeon's super emotional after Maryland loses today. Where does it mean for their program? And if they were to move on from him, what kind of coach could they get? What is Maryland as a program at this point? Because I think it's even different from when they hired Turgeon a couple of years ago. But ultimately, with this running back thing, JP looked at it as, and we looked at this entire exercise differently, the way we defined importance. JP was like, how do we save the bottom from falling out of this thing? And for me, I was like, what takes them from 6 to 8 wins to being a playoff team? And so for me, I looked at the running backs and said, if Geis is what they thought he's capable of being, then they might be better than we think they're capable of. Darius is a game changer if he's right. And I know we haven't seen it yet, but the tape don't lie. That kid is super special physically. Mentally, can he process the game? Can he take it to the NFL level? We'll see. But, man, he looked different from everyone else in training camp. And even on the run he got hurt on, he looked incredible. It's preseason. I get it. But if he is what they think, not only will he be the starter, which to me puts him ahead of AP, but he's a game changer. If AP's what he was last year, which was very, very good, but not a total game changer, need to hit more home runs, then, like, yeah, they're good, but I don't know how much that really changes. Now, JP's argument on the flip side of that was, but if Darius isn't ready or isn't healthy and can't take on the load or is not the same after the injury, then AP being there as insurance keeps you from being terrible, which is also true. But it doesn't change my order, nor does it change the fact that I don't understand this thought that Darius will not be the starter. Like, I almost want to, like, hang up on anybody who says that. Because it's just not, like, after we had that discussion yesterday, I made a call just to make sure I wasn't taking crazy pills, and I was told, yes, if they're healthy, Darius will be the starter. It just is. It's not a debate. And that's not a shot at AP. It's just, like, let's remember how good Geis we think he is. I know we haven't seen it yet, but that didn't stop anybody last year after he got drafted from getting 78 feet out over their skis. And there was nothing until the point that he got hurt that showed us that we were wrong to be excited about him. And I was very, very surprised yesterday when we took calls that people were just ready to dismiss him and go all in on AP. I'm not even going to go like 34 years old, yada, yada, yada. Like, he was very, very good last year. he had an offensive line for the second half of the season. He's a 1,200-yard rusher. But could Geis have been a 1,500-yard rusher? Maybe not that much of a disparity, but 13 or 14 I don't think is crazy. So 800-636-1067. We got a couple calls already on hold. Michael and Dave, y'all hang out. We'll get back to you, and you can kick us off before I believe we have Cooley coming up at 4:30. I'm Craig Hoffman in this. It's weird. I'm doing my own show. I'm used to and Chad Dukes versus the world, but I'm not, even though it's 4 o'clock. It's just Saturday now. It's the Hoffman Show. There's nobody sitting next to me. I'm no longer in a casino. So it's the Hoffman Show on 106.7 The Fan.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hoffman Show on the Fan, just Saturday this week, because tomorrow I will not be here. I will be in Phoenix, Arizona for the NFL's annual meeting, aka the owners' meetings. They'll decide on a couple of rule changes. They will do some other stuff, have the coaches' breakfast Tuesday morning. It's a big gathering of everybody on Monday night, which is a good time. And at some point over those 3 days, I will sit down and interview Bruce Allen. First time I've ever interviewed Bruce one-on-one. That should be fun. I get 5 minutes. I need to strategize on how I'm going to spend my 5 minutes. Should be a good time. So I want to go over the rule changes later in this show as well. I got to read through them and try to condense them down into English, not rule-ish, if you will. But the pass interference is on the table, and a couple other things are on the table. So we will get to that a little later in the show. Right now, though, talking running backs, and this is the question. Who is the most important running back for the Redskins in 2019? It's based off a conversation J.P. Finley and I were having 24 hours ago in Chad Dukes versus the world in a smoke-filled casino. Now I'm in a nice, healthy, clean studio. Michael's in Chesapeake. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the Fan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My opinion, AP hands down. And I'm glad you got Cooley coming on to talk about play calling with current coach right now, because if you remember, all of AP long runs came from under center, but you continue to try to run him out of shotgun. Wrong. And guys, this team always anoints somebody before they've ever done anything. You remember we had Alfred Morris, then you go get this big hunk of a He-Man from Florida.
Yeah, Matt Jones. Like that was Scott McLuhan's pet project, and he wasn't
awful,
as good at
man.
Picking players as everyone wanted to make him out to be.
Awful, man. Now, here we are, anointing Geis when you got this Hall of Famer that still got some wheels. And we continue to say he's old. Even the league says he's old, but he continued to prove it wrong. And he did that without a line. I mean, well, we was mixing and matching all year long. Guys from Walmart, UPS came and put a uniform on. He was still running the ball.
Yeah, but not well at the end of the year once those guys showed up. Like, not it wasn't AP's fault. AP in his prime would have not had great games at the end of last year. Let's pull up AP's numbers. And also, it doesn't help when you have no vertical passing game. Like, linebackers are crowding the line of scrimmage because they have no respect for anybody. Jordan Reed goes out. Everybody goes out. Like, it was crazy what AP was able to do last year. And it was really impressive. Geis could have done the same thing. Like, he just, unless he's nothing close to what we thought he was going to be, you know, and look, like, did he have some impressive games towards the end of the year? Yeah, the Tennessee game was insane. He almost won them that game. It was absolutely insane. 26 carries, 119 yards. Also had a catch for 8 yards. No touchdowns in that game, but I mean, it's crazy. But he also had, in the season finale, only four attempts, had no yards. 19 carries for 51 yards in Jacksonville. Helped them win that game, even though the numbers weren't good. In the four straight losses to Houston, Dallas, Philly, and the Giants, he had 16 carries for 51 yards, 12 carries for 35 yards, 9 for 98 against Philly, but of course one of those was a 90-yarder. And then 10 for 16 yards in the 40-16 shellacking against the Giants. Before that, even 19 for 68 against Tampa and 9 for 17 against Atlanta. He was awesome early. 19 for 120 against Green Bay. 26 for 96 against Arizona. 17 for 97, 24 for 99, 26 for 149 against Carolina, Dallas, Giants, three-game winning streak. But let's not pretend like he was a Hall of Fame Adrian Peterson last year. He was really good, and he was really, really good when Brandon Scherff and Trent Williams were healthy. No one was going to be amazing when those guys weren't. However, to pretend like Darius couldn't have done that, I think it's underestimating Geis's talent, even if we haven't seen it yet. Adrian's the backup. He's going to be the backup. Dave's in Fredericksburg. Dave, thanks for calling. You're on the Fan.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I don't see this as one of those either-or things. I think that this is, you know, can kind of be a dual threat. They have different running styles. And while I think Darius will probably be the quote-unquote starter, I think a perfect breakdown would be about 50% Geis, 40% Peterson, and 10% Thompson. I would limit Thompson's stuff to keep him healthy and keep him playing throughout the season. But one of my question marks with Geis, and this is something that we don't know, is what is his goal line? What is his red zone like? Adrian Peterson was the first time we actually had a red zone threat where he could consistently get in the end zone. We haven't had that in years. And even if we keep him around for that reason and that reason only, I'm fine with him, and I'm fine with splitting the workload.
Dave, that's an awesome call, man, because I think you're dead on. Thanks for the call. I actually think that's the correct answer. When I say Darius is going to be the starter, and I'm stunned that he's deemed by some, even someone like JP, whose opinion I respect a lot, and JP's super plugged in, that Adrian is somehow more important than Darius. Like, it's not like I don't think AP is important, and I don't think, it's not like I think he should just sit on the bench and wait for Darius to be super tired. Like, you or need a blow or get hurt. Like, he should play. He should play a lot. But a lot is relative. Like, I think ideally, Geis gets 15 to 20 carries a game, Peterson gets 10 to 15, and Thompson gets 10 to 12 touches. Maybe 4 to 5 of those are carries, and then 5 to 8 receptions. I don't think it's that hard to, I mean, it's obviously, you got to see how a game's going to play out. Some games, you know, you might rush the ball closer to 40 times if you're up. But ultimately, I think that you need, Darius Geis was drafted in the second round. And you look at the production from their second round picks, and it's awful. And the only guys that have produced aren't here anymore. Think about it. Last year's Geis, you haven't gotten anything yet. You need your draft picks to play well. The year before that, is Cravens? Yikes. Actually, no, that was 2 years ago. Right? 2 years ago, Cravens? I believe so. And then before that, you have Preston. Or sorry, the year before that was Ryan Anderson. So you're still waiting. You think that one could be pretty good. The year before that was Sua Cravens. We all know how that went. The year before that, Preston Smith. The year before that, Trent Murphy. Year before that, David Amerson. No, Amerson didn't make it through his first contract. Neither did Cravens. Smith and Murphy did, and you couldn't keep them. The whole point of drafting these guys in the second round is they're like part. They're starters for you for 8 years. That's the goal. And with a running back, if you waste a year, which you already have one that's gone with Geis, like, what are you doing? You invested serious draft capital in this guy. You need to figure out if he can play. He's not backing up Adrian Peterson. Not to mention, I'm not anointing him, but his ceiling is so much higher. And look, if he's terrible, then you play Peterson. But the idea that, like, oh, we know what AP is, he should start. No! Because you don't know how good Guice is, he should start. Unless it's blatantly obvious in camp that Peterson's better. Because Guice is slow or whatever, trying to come back from injury. Guice is the guy. He is the guy that can completely take their offense to a different level. And I am... Everyone seemed to understand that when he got drafted, and he gets hurt, and now everyone's off that bandwagon? I don't get it. Tom's in Fort Washington. Tom, thanks for calling. You're on the Fan.
It's not that everyone doesn't understand. It's just that the last caller explained it to you, and it's like, yeah, you are. And when you label a guy as the starter when he's never even played in the NFL, I mean, you are anointing him. That's what you're doing.
No, I'm giving him the job that, like, you drafted him to do.
You don't know. You have to earn a job in NFL.
No, you don't.
He hasn't earned anything, so you do not put it. You don't? Come on. Stop it.
Was he going to be the starter last year?
We don't even know. He got
yes,
hurt
he was! Dummy. Like, what the hell are you talking about? Did you pay attention to anybody covering the team? Did you pay attention to any of the coverage? Did you pay attention to anything? Did you pay attention to the coaches? Darius Guice was going to be the starter last year till the second they found out he had a torn ACL. And I talked to someone yesterday who is going to be part of making the decision. He's going to be the starter if he's healthy. This is not an argument. You don't get to, like, you don't get your own facts. Does Eddie, Jesus Christ. Eddie's in Chantilly. Eddie, you're on the Fan.
Yeah, man. Come on. Craig Hoffman, what's up, man? Adrian Peterson's a starter, bro. He has been a starter all his life. Why? Did you see him last year?
Yeah, and I just read you his stats when things went downhill last year.
Okay, so why would an unproven back start over him?
Because he's 34 years old, and they spent a second-round pick on him last year.
But what happened last year?
He got hurt.
Because a 34-year-old back got hurt and
No. Guice got hurt.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying then. Why would an unproven, already hurt running back...
Because he's not hurt anymore! Do you... Chris Cooley's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news... You call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hoffman Show on the Fan. I give up on this running back thing. I can't believe this is a discussion. And I guess I'll bring in Chris Cooley now to talk about it on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. And then we'll get into his play calling project, which was super interesting to listen to on his podcast. Cooley, of course, you can hear on the Cooley podcast, Cooley at the Park, via Redskins.com and anywhere you can find podcasts. Christopher, how are you, sir?
What's up, Craig? How you doing, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm exasperated. JP and I got into this thing yesterday, and I could not believe how this went, and now I'm ready to get your opinion on it, and I'm hoping that you are siding with me because I will feel less like I'm taking crazy pills. The most important Redskins running back in 2019 is who to you?
Darius Guice.
Is it even, like, not no disrespect to AP or CT, but, like, is it close?
No, it's not close.
Thank God, because I thought I was taking crazy pills.
It could be close if Chris Thompson could carry the ball 15 times a game or 10 times a game and still have 8-plus receptions. Because you could make an argument for what the Patriots do with Burkhead and White and what they've done with backs for forever. So it could be close, but the Redskins aren't going to do that with Chris Thompson, so it's not close. I mean... Now, barring AP getting hurt, you're talking about Guice, that was the guy that was supposed to be the best second-round pick of all time who got hurt in preseason. They need Guice to be good.
That's what I've said. Thank you. I feel better now. Let's get into your play-calling thing. Why did you decide to go back and look at 500 plays from this season, and what did you find when you did that?
Oh, I found so much, Craig. Why did I decide to do this? I don't know. I wanted a project. Seriously, though, I was really interested in the lack of offensive success that the Redskins had and why. And I was also, and am still also just as interested in the way you orchestrate a game plan to have great success in the NFL for what it is today. And so I started with first downs because, in my opinion, first downs are where you get a lot of chunk plays because you can deviate and you can change formations and you can change personnel groupings and can do whatever you want to do. They're run viable downs. So I did that. I went through second downs. And then I think I got to my favorite part of this yesterday, which is the run pass percentage argument. You know, everyone wants to run the ball 50% of the time, right? Or people want to stay balanced.
Right.
How many times have you heard that conversation? Like, hey, you got to stay balanced. Can you believe they passed it 45 times and ran it 20? Like, that's garbage. You can't win that way.
Yeah, heard it a million times.
Stupidest, most idiotic argument or conversation or analytic in the history of analytics. There is no reasonable reason you should think that. And here's essentially what I did, man. I took the Redskins' total plays, which was 1,011 total plays, and I tried to find run downs, run viable downs. Right? So I think if you even want to consider balance, you consider run plays, the ratio of run plays on run downs, not all downs.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, out of 109 plays, you had about 350 first down and 10 situations, maybe 340, where the game was in hand where you could run the ball.
Right. So you're taking you're taking out 4 minute, you're taking out 2 minute, you're taking out.
I didn't take out 4 minute. I left 4 minute in because those are still run downs.
Right.
I'm taking out 2 minute, I'm taking out end of half, I'm taking out down 14 points at any point in the fourth quarter.
Gotcha.
So you had about 325. I personally think there were 310 rundowns, but I'm going to give you 340 just for whatever purpose of this exercise. My personal opinion is 310 out of 430. 339 second downs. I think there were 130 rundowns. By the way, the Redskins on second, they had 180 out of 339 second and eight pluses.
That's terrible.
It's incredible. It's like 70% second and eight plus. Second and seven plus is 70%.
So it tells you
that there's 130 there.
Yeah. On first down, you're not only not getting big chunk plays, you're not getting like little chunk plays. You're winding up behind the chains. Let me ask you this. Because I also want to, like, if people want all the numbers and all the data, they should go listen to your podcast. Because that's the perfect point for it.
Okay, I'll sum it up quickly.
Yeah.
I gotta sum it up for my own feel good.
Okay.
Obviously, you count out most of the third downs. There's 60 total third downs. So essentially, the way I got to it, I can come up with out best 570 rundowns out of 1,009. You want to know what you got to do to stay balanced completely? Run it every single time.
Right.
Now, obviously, a season can play out differently where you're getting more yards on first down because of some run plays or you have more rundowns. But the Redskins had 570 rundowns out of 1,009. The balance for the Redskins offense would have been 25 to 30% run. It was 38. So that was my favorite project of the week.
Gotcha. So I want to look, folks, focus primarily on first down here because I feel like that's where a lot of the criticism of Jay was last year, running it too much, whatever it was. But, you know, the numbers are what they are, but I think it's more interesting to take it to the next level of diving into the cause. Why did he feel like he needed to call it this way? Was this some kind of faulty game plan? Was this a product of personnel and not having the ability to go downfield and protect for throws downfield? Like, why do you think they wound up calling the game on first down the way they did? And how did it change if you were able to track this at all throughout the season as Trent Brandon and Paul Richardson go down and they lose some of their, obviously, their downfield playmaking receiver and the ability to protect a quarterback.
Everything that I just said about the run percentage is why I think Jay ran the ball so much on first down. Because I think he wanted to stay balanced with a antiquated, I don't know, system, algorithm, analytic, whatever you want to call it, of what is actually balanced. That's my personal belief.
So it wasn't...
That he was trying to have run-pass balance.
Do you think that was, like, him trying to, quote-unquote, stick it to the media and the fans? Or was it how we feel like some, you know, this is how we need to win football games?
I just think that's what... I think that's common across the league. I don't think, and when I say it, I don't think it's just Jay. I think it's common to think that you need to stay balanced without actually realizing what balance is.
And the way you defined balance, and you did this on the podcast you put out yesterday, I thought was really interesting. Can you share what you define as balance and the best example in the league of balance?
My balance is on run viable downs, making everything look the same. And so I don't think it makes a difference if you go play action screen, or run. I think all of those look so incredibly similar. And you can also get to drop back off a lot of those looks by going fly sweep into drop back. So you can make everything look the same as much as possible. And to me, that's what balance is. That's tying the entire room together. It's making your offense have a flow, have synergy, have cohesion. When you start to come up with a bunch of different looks and a bunch of different styles, nothing looks the same to the defense, and so they just play everything honestly. They don't have any predisposed thoughts of what could happen. So they're just playing it straight up, and it's hurting them. So I think that was a problem. But to the point of the numbers on first down, I mean, dude, you're talking about 7% of first down plays, first and 10, had play action pass. Seven. There were 7 boot plays out of 310 plays, 2%. So between play, action, pass, and boot, you were less than 10% of your first and 10 plays. Those are the plays you get chunk plays on, man.
Yeah.
You don't get chunk plays on dive. You just don't. The dive's a great call on second and 3, which is where I'd like to get a first down. Second and 2, fine. But dive doesn't also create for play action. So, and that was their number one run plays. Just gap scheme dive, essentially, is the easiest way to describe it.
Yeah. Chris Cooley with me, Craig Hoffman, here on 106.7 The Fan. Chris is all of our guests on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. Do you think ultimately Kevin O'Connell has the personality and the power to, as you put it, tie the room together, to take what Bill Callahan would like to do, to take what Jay Gruden would like to do, and take the things that he himself brings, some of the RPO, things like that? Do you think that he has the ability and has the power to mesh this into a cohesive offense that can be effective, get chunk yardage, and make their lives a hell of a lot easier?
I think he's very talented, and I think he's bright. I think he's smart. I like having conversations with him. I don't fully understand what his ability is. I can't answer the question in terms of does he have the power. I'm not sure what he'll be gifted in terms of is he the play caller, is he the play designer, is he just the play installer? So I think that he will be a talented coach in this league because I think there's something about him there. But in terms of is it going to solve it, I'm not sure. Everything I did, though, and everything I've put together is what they should be doing. Like, there should be a pretty simple understanding of where their failures were through every down and distance and every situation and every tendency. And it should be a group effort to break those tendencies. It shouldn't just be Kevin O'Connell. It should be a collaborative effort that, by the way, Craig, doesn't actually have to stop with the offensive coaching staff. Could go over to the defensive staff and say, hey, what's hard for you on first and 10? What things are you struggling with? What are you looking at with an offense? I mean, that's most of the best coaches in this league. By the way, the Sean McVays, which is, I think, where you wanted me to go with who was best on first and 10.
Well, that's what you said on the podcast. You know, it'd be a little weird if you change
the person's
now.
You know the person I saw Sean spend the most time with when he was the offensive coordinator? Joe Barry, the defensive coordinator. Because he wanted to know what he was trying to do and how a defensive coordinator would approach it. So great offensive coaches, they spend time with defensive coaches as much as they do their own guys. And so it's a team deal, or should be a team deal, more than most people think.
That makes sense. Let me ask you this on the way out here. You see this data, and it seems like it'd be pretty alarming, and that when they do their own self-scouting that they would go, oh, my God, I can't believe we're this out of whack. We need to fix this. Obviously, you'd think they'd come to that realization in doing this now in the spring, but they self-scout during the year, too, and ultimately Jay is smart enough to know that less than 10% play-action boot, et cetera, during the season, like that's something that should be a bigger part of their offense. You'd think that he would have that. So how does it get this out of whack in the first place? Do you have any way of answering that?
No one wants to tell him it's not good enough, and he didn't do it himself, would be my only answer for it. That he didn't sit with a calculator and come up with these numbers himself, and that if someone did, they didn't want to go to him and tell him it wasn't good enough.
Interesting. All right. Hey, the project was cool and interesting, and people should listen to it on the Cooley podcast. What you got coming up this week? You got any more quarterback stuff? Or you?
Yeah, I did Will Greer on Friday, and I'm going to do the kid out of Northwestern, and then I'm going to get to any possible drafts the Redskins could have between pick number 8 and pick number 25 or 30. So probably get to 30 or 40 guys over the next couple of weeks in not the quarterback fashion.
Gotcha. Look forward to
it. You know, you can trade back or trade up. You never know what they're going to do.
This is true. The unpredictability of April. It is almost upon us. All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. See ya.
See ya.
That's Chris Cooley, former Redskins tight end, really smart football brain, and person who spent a lot of time watching film and will continue to spend a lot of time watching film. If you want the podcast, go to Redskins.com or Apple Podcasts. Check it out. If you go back about 4 episodes, you'll hear a familiar voice on that, and that was me on the day of the Landon Collins signing. So that was a good time. Sit down with Chris. Always enjoy talking ball with him. I want to get into kind of some of his conclusions and my thoughts on them. It'll be less specific, less numeric, but more big picture things that need to happen for them. And then we will get to some hoops coming up, obviously, here in March Madness. As Chris and everything else is happening there, been able to lock down a few guests. We'll do more NFL coming up at 5. Danny Kelly of The Ringer. At 6 o'clock, Emily Caron, who writes for Sports Illustrated and has covered University of Virginia a lot. She was a student journalist there, graduated 2 years ago, but has been obviously continuing to cover college hoops for SI. She's going to join at 6. And then Spiro Ditas, who is covering the NCAA tournament and calling the games on CBS, he's going to be at 6:45 to end the show, and Jeff Ehrman on Maryland at 5:30. So we got a ton of guests, we got a ton of hoops, we got a ton of football. It's a fun time of year. Also, like, if you could sit down with Bruce Allen, what would you ask him? I need to kind of come up with the game plan, so maybe we'll workshop some stuff, because I'm going to sit down with Bruce Allen out in Phoenix, Arizona at the league meeting coming up in just a few days. I'm Craig Hoffman. This is the Hoffman Show. You're listening to it on radio.com and 106.7 The Fan.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Reacting to what Cooley just said and the first down play calling, the fact that less than 10% of their first and 10 play calls were play action or boot is absolutely crazy. But I think part of that is personnel. Alex Smith was not good on boot. The most notable boot play of the season was the 4th down and 1 where he threw the interception against New Orleans that was just one of the worst balls I've ever seen thrown by a professional quarterback. It was just awful. And so to know that that guy and is your quarterback for half the season and you're trying to run those plays, yeah, you're not going to get a whole lot of boot. And I think they discovered that pretty early, that he's not super comfortable on the run. But it also has to do with the fact that their run and pass games don't match. Like, and if I'm Jay, why am I booting off wide zone knowing that I never run wide zone? And that, to me, is the biggest gripe. And kind of goes to the last point that I was talking about with Chris, which is like, how did that happen in the first place? I understand Bill Callahan calls the runs. And I'm not blaming this on Bill or Kevin slash Jay. Kevin O'Connell had the title of pass game coordinator. And obviously, Jay had an enormous impact on tying it all together. They all came up with the game plan together. Matt Kavanaugh in that group as well. Randy Jordan in that group as well. They all come up with the game plan together, but then Jay calls it. But like, during the week, you guys had to at some point go like, hey guys, our running game and our passing game don't look alike. Like, we can't run play action off runs that we don't run, because the whole point of play action is to make them think we're going to run it. And if they know that that run is not something we do, then they're not going to think that we're running it. And if people like us in the media could figure that out, why couldn't they in their offensive meetings? And now we have these numbers to back it up to say, like, you just weren't good enough in terms of being creative on first down. And at times it did feel like Jay was just calling runs so that he could be like, yeah, well, we tried to run it early. No, you need to run the ball with a purpose. And I don't think Jay's a bad play caller. I actually think Jay's a pretty good game planner. Like, I actually think that's what he does best, is put together a game plan. Because when the plays work, their offense is amazing. They got people shifting everywhere and all kinds of stuff. They just couldn't get it all to jive for any length of time. But I also do think the fact that their personnel went to hell has a large part to do with it. And so this season is going to be a big difference. Danny Kelly next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.